All right, with about 38 games to go, whatever it is, the Giants have got to get it together here, and they've got to do it in Minneapolis, which is not an easy place to play right now, against the Twins, who broke a six-game losing streak last night, beating the Giants 9-0. Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle, how are you, Bruce?
Good, Barney. How's it going?
Pretty well. First of all, congratulations. Today you're going to get the Ron Bergman Award, which honors, of course, Ron Bergman, a wonderful, wonderful writer for so many years and covered the A's and wrote books about it. And you get the award, and you're going to get it today, I believe.
Yeah, before tonight's game against the Yanks. Very excited, very honored. It kind of came out of nowhere. I'm sure it's nothing I wrote yesterday. This probably goes way back to covering Billy Ball, and I covered really more A's than Giants during my beat writing days, but it's a cool thing. And, you know, Ron Bergman, I would advise, if the name is a bit of a mystery to A's fans, I would try and get a hold of a book called The Mustache Gang. You might be able to find a used paperback. It's an amazing account of the A's World Champions, tempestuous locker room, all the things that went on. He covered the heck out of that team and really established his legend.
Well, he was wonderful, Bergie. And yeah. When I first started, he, of course, was covering the A's at that time, I think for the probably the Oakland Tribune, I guess, at that time.
Yeah.
And we would go in Art Howe's office after the game, and right away Bruce McGowan would go in with his microphone, and there would be a TV guy who would call Art Howe coach or something like that. and then it would end, and Bergie would say, "All right, the audio-visual time is over now. Let's get down to baseball."
And, yeah, in those days, the TV and radio were considered just a totally ridiculous and unnecessary intrusion on the writers' needs and what they needed to get done. It's different now. There's so much, you know, everything is instantaneous and online right away. But in those days, it was really annoying to see some people who didn't really know what they were doing. Maybe they're out there for the first time, or they didn't know the game, and they're just asking these hideous questions. They're finally gone. Okay, now we can start in on this.
It's true. He said it every time. Every time. Bergie was terrific, and that's a good award for you to get. And the Hall of Fame award is next for you. That's the one we want, next year for you. But, Bergie was fun. And just to finish off that thought, the camera person who used to come in was not a baseball person. It was just some guy who would hold the microphone. And you're right. He would ask a question that had nothing to do with it, and that would be the end of it. Very good. Very good.
If you're a player and you don't like, you know that the guy has no idea what he's talking about, and he's sticking a microphone right in your face, you just want to shut the interview thing off right there, you know? Anyway.
That was great. Well, congratulations on that. And
thank
enjoy.
You.
Yeah, absolutely enjoy it tonight. So well deserved. Well, what a week for so much happening this week in baseball. First of all, the new schedule is out for next year, Bruce. How about that and what it looks like?
I think it's terrific. I really do. For those of us who go way back, it was a real shock when in the late 60s, all of a sudden, winning the pennant wasn't enough. I mean, the whole history of the game was you win the pennant or that's it. You know, you got 154 games and you either win the pennant or you go home. And it was kind of pure, and nobody really thought much about it. It seemed like the way to go. But once the wild card thing started coming in, and, you know, it's great, and interleague and everything. And so this is really not a shock. To me, it's they're finally getting interleague play straight in that you play everybody. And over the course of 2 years, you'll see everybody at home, and the off year you'll get them on the road, and if this were to happen like in 1968, like all of a sudden they did this after all those years of having to win the pennant, that would be a bit of a shock. But I don't know. There's something to be said for, you know, Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews going against Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford, and wow, what a matchup! We've never seen this, and you could go on and on. But the way the game has evolved, I think this is terrific.
Well, I think it's a good part of marketing for baseball, really, because baseball wants to get Mike Trout, playing the Mets. And things, just as you said, Eddie Matthews in Yankee Stadium against the Yankees, and see if he can hit one out of Yankee Stadium. So yeah. Baseball is clearly concerned about marketing the game, and this is a way of getting it in every city, which is very important, which is another part of what they're trying to do, Bruce, and we'll talk about this some more. But there's planning to have games in South Korea. You see this over the winter? They haven't named mm-hmm. the teams yet. You know, there'll be all-star teams that go to South Korea to play some games there. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for a while I thought, you know, they were playing games in Japan, and I'm thinking, you know, it's an awful long way to go someplace where the people really know baseball. They've been playing it for a long time over there. They've got their own way of doing it, but you know, they don't need to be introduced to baseball. To send teams all the way over there to do that, there's an element of coolness to it. But, you know, the best of it should be, if not introducing the game, you know, giving a country a look at what's going on. Of course, South Korea in recent years has really become an excellent league. We got a real good look at it during the worst of the pandemic when we were getting a game out of Korea every night. And a lot of great players have come out of there. So that's, you know, that they're at a stage where I think, you know, the infusion of big league games would be very beneficial for them.
Well, it's funny how things go around in a circle, because they definitely want to market the game throughout the world. Bruce, in 1913, they did a tour. The New York Giants and Chicago White Sox went around the world for like 4 months by ship. And the reason they did it was the great Jim Thorpe was signed by the New York Giants, and he was the big drawing card all over the world because he had won the medals at the 1912 Olympics in Stockholm, which then they were stripped from him for another story. But they went to South Korea. They went all over to China, you name it. And baseball has always tried to do that. And as I said the other night with FP, they're going to play in front of the Sphinx in Egypt. You know, that's coming.
Always a willing audience. I love the Sphinx.
Yeah, they're very quiet. They watch the game very
stoic, I got to tell you, yeah.
Very, very quietly. So baseball wants to do that. And the other thing is, when you can have games against all these other teams, there's no real American League or National League anymore. When someone gets traded from the American League to the National League, he brings his stats with him, which I can't get over. But there's really no league separateness, the umpires, whatever. So this kind of thing is just another way of just cleansing baseball of the leagues and just having the teams, the 30 teams or 32 teams, whatever they have.
Yeah, there's a real element of fairness to it. So for so long, you played, like the Giants would play at just a certain division. Now, let's say they drew the American League East, and they drew the Yanks and the Red Sox, Arizona might get, you know, the weaker division in the American League, and that's just not fair, and it could flip. Whatever it is, it's never fair. It's never going to be a fair setup when one team gets a different division than you get. And now everybody plays everybody, and it is, you know, it's going to be some dull moments, but I tell you, I'm delighted not to see as much of Arizona and Colorado. Just absolutely thrilled about that. And you still get four series with the Dodgers, which is just enough. I'd hate to see it be less than that, but, you know, the overload against teams in your division gets a little tiresome sometimes. That's the one casualty of the thing is less games against the Dodgers. But to me, four series is enough.
Yeah, so you get your 52 games within your division, 13 against each opponent in your division. Then you end up with 64 games against the teams in your league, not in your division, because there'll be 10 teams, and basically it's six per team, and some will be seven, depending on how they have to make it up. And the rest you have, of course, with interleague, and you're going to have 46 interleague games as opposed to 20. So they're really divesting themselves of the American League and the National League. And I like it. It's fine. Joe Posnanski, who's a terrific writer out of Kansas City, had something interesting. And he was saying that, look, baseball is changing everything. You know, the shift is going to be changed next year. The pitch clock is coming. Who knows what else is going to come about. But he suggested that they have a World Cup-type tournament in the middle of the summer. When there's no NBA, no NHL, no NFL, the baseball would have the full scene, and the statistics would count, so you wouldn't lose any of that. But you'd have like a 2-week tournament of a, you know, a knockout kind of thing of a World Cup tournament. What do you think about that?
Well, that's pretty rough. I mean, if you get knocked out of this thing early, maybe you're celebrating, you know, because you get a long break. Or some teams are going right to the end, and it's what's really at stake there. You know, it's like the idea of an NBA in season tournament. This is not soccer. You're not winning anything. Nobody's going to remember who won the in-season tournament or this World Cup thing. It'd be better if it was a real World Cup with one nation against another. Well, you obviously couldn't do that, but no, that's an overload to me because it's not fair. Because teams, if you get, you know, teams will play maybe three games and another team's playing 12. No, absolutely not.
All right. This is what he put out there. So,
but you know, I don't like anything. I've never liked anything. I never liked the wild card. I never liked the expanded playoffs. I always come around. Didn't like the pitch clock. You know, I always come around. So maybe it'll work. It seems odd to me right now.
How about this one? You would have a tournament, and you would determine the winner of a game by set. Whoever wins the first three innings, and the second, the fourth, fifth, and sixth, and the seventh, eighth, and ninth would win the game. How about that?
I think it should be who eats the most asparagus. That'll come right down to that.
Okay. That's what look, Bruce, this is what they're talking about in behind closed doors of how to change the game. So so we'll see. But that came out this week with the new schedule, so people were sort of coming up with different ideas. Mm-hmm. The playoff schedule is out, and this one actually is interesting because there'll be no days off. Between games 4 and 5 in the division series. So, you know, if you're playing in New York and the game 5 is in Los Angeles, you got to do that overnight. And in the league championship series, there'll be no days off between games 5 and 6. How about that?
Yeah, it takes me back to the days when the A's were great in the early 2000s, and they had to go from Yankee Stadium to Oakland or vice versa with no day off.
Remember that?
Rough.
Yeah.
Remember that? And
mm-hmm.
It can really, really take a toll. It's great for the TV audience because, you know, you get action every night and it's sort of nonstop, and that's great. But I don't know. I'm not sure. There's so many teams involved that you have to tighten it up. You don't want the thing to end at Thanksgiving. You know, I mean, you got to tighten it up a little bit. But I've always favored shortening the schedule maybe to 154 and try to get the season launched in late March. And so even with this, you'd still be done in October. But it'll be rough. But teams will adjust as they always have. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of people complaining about the negative side of it. But we'll see how it goes.
Well, the writers too, people who cover it. You know,
You
know, you're not going on a charter either. You know, that's got to be dealt with too. So, yeah, that's going to be different. That is a change, and you don't have that extra day off, and it'll change the pitching. Where maybe
mm-hmm.
now you
Very
do need
so.
A fourth starter. You know, mm-hmm. usually you could go with three. Now you may need a fourth. So that'll wait till it plays out. This will be different. I'll guarantee you that. It will be different. All right, let's talk Giants a little bit. Bruce, they got walloped last night, 9-0. Wood gets blasted for the second game in a row. The rotation's starting to leak a little bit here, and especially with San Diego coming in, the Phillies coming in, then you go to the Dodgers, Milwaukee, Cubs, and all that. This is not a time to have trouble, and the Braves are in the middle of that too. This is not a time to have trouble.
Oh, man, not at all. I mean, it was such a strange outing for Wood last night. If he goes to 0-2 counts, and then he hits a guy in the foot. and then later he comes down too much, gets too much plate, and the ball goes out for a big double or a home run. I know he was very discouraged. He's such a fierce competitor, but you know, you talk about the difference between the numbers and how guys look. I mean, the impression on Wood is that, you know, this guy is a huge factor in our trying to pull this wild card thing out. Meanwhile, his ERA is 5. And he's given up as many hits as innings pitched. So, you know, he's getting knocked around a little bit. He's certainly capable of coming back. That's like his whole life story. I mean, he'll probably turn in a couple of gems here. But between that and the you know, having to come up with an opener or maybe Junis or maybe not, and it's crumbling a little bit. I wouldn't say it's falling apart, but it's not. The timing certainly isn't good.
No, the Padres come in Monday night for 3, And the Giants do have the rotation set up for Rodon. Then Logan Webb, who's had trouble his last two. And then you bring Wood back on Wednesday. And Musgrove is in the middle of that. Snell is in there. Manaea is in there. So this is going to be interesting. But I'll tell you one thing. Padres don't hit a lot, Bruce. And Washington really exposed him to the fastball. And I would say Rodon on Monday night should have his way with the Padres.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, they did come alive last night. And Josh Bell started to hit a little bit. Kim, the shortstop, who really, you know, without Tatis, you know, he's the shortstop, and he's got to at least show something. He drove in five runs last night, and they needed most of them. And Soto hasn't played in a week. He's got a bad back. So, yeah, I mean, this, I'm not throwing out any suggestion that the Padres are back by any means. I'd expect like a one hitter over seven from Rodon against the team we're looking at right now.
Yeah, if he goes with the big fastball, they have had real trouble hitting the fastball. Washington really exposed them there. Yeah, Soto's been out. He didn't play last night again, and he's got some sort of back issue going on right now. So that's that. Then the Phillies come in next weekend. How about that? Because the Phillies are maybe the hottest team in the National League, even considering the Mets and the Braves.
Yeah, they went crazy when Harper was out. Then he comes back last night, and the crowd's going crazy. He's first at bat. He hits a two-run single. They've won five in a row. And, you know, they've got, before they come here, they got two more with the Pirates and three with Arizona. I think they'll be gone as far as the Giants are concerned. They won't be catching the Phillies. But, you know, Nola shut out somebody. Syndergaard pitched a great game. You know, Schwarber and Realmuto, that's a really good team. They get Tyler Beattie today. I would imagine they win that one too. So, geez, they changed managers and everything changed there. They're 71-55 and looking awful good. I'd be really shocked if they're not in the wild card picture.
Yeah, Wheeler is out though. We probably will not see him next weekend. Sounds like he's out for at least a couple of turns. But the other ones are there, and Syndergaard has done a nice job for him. And also, this Nick Castellanos is starting to hit, too. And they've got a surprise in this Alec Bohm, B-O-H-M. He's hitting the ball well. So that's what it takes. It takes some surprises during the year.
Yeah. You know, they got Segura, who's come back, and he's hitting. Matt Fairling's a good hitter. It's a very tough lineup. And then they're really fun to watch, and you could tell that they're, you know, they're on a roll and they're having a lot of fun. But Harper coming back is huge. I mean, he's just a cut above as a competitor, or, you know, a guy who loves the big moment and entertains the fans, and he's built for that. So that's a tremendous, quite to say the least, that's like making a big trade.
It's going to be a lot of fun. This is a good week of baseball. It's a good couple of weeks of baseball here. With, as I say, with the Phillies next weekend and the Padres coming in here, the Giants are going to do anything. You can forget about the last 2 weeks, which I think is a gift to them with Colorado and Arizona. But if they're going to do anything, they've got to hold their own here for the next 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. The San Diego games are huge. And don't forget that they close it out in San Diego, so that's not the best way to finish if you're three games behind them. But, yeah, this is a time for them to do what they're capable of doing. But, you know, I mean, Susan Slusser's lead today kind of captured the mood. It's like, forget, you know, you got a lot of hopes here, but let's just look at the reality of this team. It's not a good team. It's not a playoff team. It just isn't. It hasn't been all year and certainly isn't right now.
Nope, they're not. What do you think about Correa? And I brought it up on the show during the week. I brought it up today already. I like the way he plays. You know, he's a guy, he gets hurt a little bit, and yes, he comes from Houston, and who cares? But this is a shortstop. He's the Johnny Unitas on the field. He's the Joe Montana. He runs that infield, and he will be a free agent. I assume he's going to opt out from the Twins contract. I'd like to see the Giants go after him.
Oh, man, he's terrific. You know what? The way that he led Houston through the worst of the you know, the scorn raining down on them after the sign-stealing scandal was really impressive. I mean, he attacked that whole scene, you know, not just with dignity, but with just a swagger, you know, just defiant. And he was the leader of that team. They were relentlessly good all the way through it. They're still good. But yeah, he's a special guy. The whole shortstop thing, Marty, is irritating to me. How they're just shifting around. I mean, why wouldn't Seager still be the Dodgers shortstop? Why wouldn't Semien still be in Toronto instead of Texas? Why are they talking about not signing Dansby Swanson? How could Trey Turner leave the Dodgers? It's too much transition. These are great players, and it's not like they're going to cease to be great, but. If you're a team, like if you're a Dodger fan, you're really warming to Trey Turner. What, he's out of there now? Why would he want to go anywhere else? It's way too much transition at that position.
Yeah, I think Trey Turner stays there. I think that's part of the reason Seager, that they didn't pay Seager because they knew Turner was there, and I think they wanted him. And I think Atlanta keeps Swanson. You know, as good as Atlanta is with all these young players, we can talk about the young players tomorrow, this Grissom kid.
Grissom,
wow.
Yeah.
Holy
wow,
cow, they watch him run the bases.
Everything,
But I think they keep Swanson. But Correa is the guy who can move around. And look, they've got to replace Crawford. Crawford could be the backup. It's wonderful. He could play a little third if you need it. But you need a solid shortstop. And that would be my guy. That would be
tough on Crawford. It really would. I mean, to just get supplanted like that. I mean, He's obviously having a subpar year, and he's in the twilight for sure. He also deserves to go out in the proper manner. I don't know what that is, but to all of a sudden bring in a young, great player who obviously is going to play there, I'm sure he would take it well, but it would just seem odd to me for him to just be sort of hanging out on the bench. And, you know, you bring him in for defense, so you already got that with Crawford. Maybe you don't pinch hit with him that often. He's not a great hitter. So that would be awkward to me. But, I mean, certainly, if I'm a Giants fan, I'd certainly rather see Correa at shortstop. But if you got to think about Crawford a little bit there.
Okay. Now, that's a point well taken. That's something to think about. Well, you're going to see Judge tonight. 49 for him. Bruce, I'm telling you, he's going to get to 60. There was some list of all the players and how many home runs they hit in September. Or the last 35 games, or whatever it is, and Babe Ruth and Kiner and all these players. And, you know, there's 18, 19, 20 home runs. This guy's got 49 here with 38 games to go. How about it?
Yeah, it's terrific. It really is. The Yankees have they've had a great week. You know, they had the great series against the Mets. they were looking at that losing streak, but it's never going to end. All of a sudden, it definitely has, and they've had their way with the A's a little bit. They're having fun in the dugout again, and Stanton's back, and this kid, Osvaldo Fernandez, is it?
Peraza, is that the guy?
Number 95.
Yeah.
who's number 95 for the Yanks? But he came up at the worst time. I'm sorry, it was Osvaldo Cabrera, kid out of Venezuela. He's had like 5 hits against the A's already in this series. He came up in the middle of the drought, started at 4 different positions in 6 games, and was really good in all of them. He's just this fresh, you know, breath of fresh air that they really needed. I'm not saying he's a superstar or anything like that, but he's been, you know, very quietly a big reason. Benintendi's coming back in, and with all of that, I think helps Judge. You know, if the Yanks are rolling and all these guys are hitting around him, and oh my God, the damage could be beautiful. I'd love to see him get to 60 for sure.
Yeah, I would. I'm going to talk tomorrow. I'm going to ask you a question of all the records that could be broken. What's the most exciting one to watch as someone is approaching it? You don't have to answer it now, but this Judge getting to 60, 61 would be pretty exciting if this goes down to the wire.
I think right off the top of my head, I'd say the most intentional walks in a game. There's nothing more thrilling. That's amazing.
That's right. Only if you're playing only if you're playing a 6-inning game. I haven't even started yet on position players pitching. We can talk about that tomorrow as well. Hey, there is an anniversary today, a historical anniversary, and Ricky Henderson, who, of course, you covered, and it's appropriate that you'll be at the Coliseum tonight to receive your award. But Ricky broke Lou Brock's season stolen base record today.
Yeah, one of the things I really look back on with a lot of fondness from covering ball was the A's were the first team I covered. I was there when he broke it in '79. You're hearing about this kid who stole 95 bases for Modesto in the California League, and he hit 345, and he had some power, and he shows up, and he's absolutely that. He's more than that. You know, he carried himself as someone special. You know, and he was, and he knew it, and it was cool. You know, but I saw on television, but covered most of his 130 steals. I was every day beat writer from 81 to 83, so, and he went completely nuts during that whole time. And just, I saw a lot of Lou Brock and a lot of Maury Wills and all these guys, but Billy Martin said it something one time. He goes, you know, I've seen a lot of great base dealers, and most of them, you know, they'll get thrown out. This guy doesn't get thrown out. Ricky Henderson, I mean, and he didn't even really study, you know, the art of stealing and the nuances every single pitcher the way like Davey Lopes did, you know. And Lopes, I tried to coach him a little bit when he was with the A's, but he realized that Ricky, between just the inherent genius and the 0-60 and the confidence and you know, the head first slide, which, you know, he did the head first slide like a million times, and he never wore on him. You know, he's like a little rock, but unbelievably special player. I've always thought if you have the all-time team, he wouldn't be in the outfield, but if you wanted to make a statement at the leadoff spot, you'd either go with him or Jackie Robinson. Like, okay, we're ready now. Who you got?
Hey, I always said he made a major league game look like a little league game. That's how he ran the bases, and that's the best analogy. If you ever see a little league game and they're running like crazy, that's what this guy did in the major leagues.
But, and he had 299 homers. You know, out of all of a sudden, he'd hit like 440 feet. Just, whoa.
Boy, 1982 broke Lou Brock's record on today's date. Bruce, have a great night tonight, a well-deserved honor, and I hope
Thanks
you enjoy
so much,
it.
Marty.
And I look forward to talking to you tomorrow, early tomorrow for us. Have a great night.
Thanks a million. Talk then.
Okay. All right. That's Bruce Jenkins. More coming up. David Schoenfield will join us from ESPN.com. Wrote a very, very interesting article this week. We'll talk about the top 10 storylines to follow for the rest of the season. A very good summary of what's going on in baseball and some of the exciting moments. So we'll do that when we come back right after these messages.